Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Newsmakers from America and around the world speak with journalists in an unscripted and unrehearsed discussion about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. Here is your host on this edition of Press Conference USA, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America as we commemorate the 70th anniversary of the Allied D-Day invasion against Nazi forces in World War II. We are delighted to welcome as our special guest on this edition of the program, His Excellency François Delattre, the Ambassador of France to the United States. Before coming to Washington, Ambassador Delattre served as Ambassador to France in Canada and as Consul General in New York. From 1998 to 2002, Ambassador Delattre was the Press and Communications Director at the French Embassy here in Washington, so he is no stranger to our nation's capital. Ambassador Delattre has held many other senior positions within the French Foreign Ministry before taking the helm in Washington. And while much has been made of the so-called special relationship between the United States and Britain, France is in fact America's oldest ally. Despite the historic and linguistic ties between Washington and London, many analysts are saying that Paris and Washington share increasingly convergent interests, from the Middle East on Iran and Syria to Africa, especially in Mali, the Central African Republic, and Nigeria, where the allies are collaborating on fighting violent extremism and sectarian tensions emanating from decades of economic disparity and inequality. As you recall, President Barack Obama honored French President François Hollande with the first state dinner of his second term in the White House. We'll talk with Ambassador Delattre about Franco-U.S. relations in light of President Obama's recent trip to Europe, where he stopped in Poland, Belgium, and of course, France, where he spoke at Omaha Beach in Normandy to mark the 70th anniversary of the Allied D-Day invasion. Ambassador François Delattre, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
We're so delighted to have you here on this historic occasion.
Thank you.
And I'd like you to actually comment on the symbolism of the 70th anniversary of D-Day for U.S.-French relations, for Europe, and even the world.
You know, Carol, we French will never forget the millions of young Americans who 70 years ago risked and often sacrificed their young lives to restore our freedom and the freedom of Europe. That's why the D-Day commemorations in Normandy were so critically important, not only for the Franco-American relationship, but as you very well said, for the world. What is at stake here is the values that we share that make our relationship, the Franco-American relationship, truly unique. You know, when President Hollande came to Washington in February for a very important state visit and very successful state visit, the first of a French president in the US in nearly 20 years, he and President Obama wanted to say to the world that the values that we have in common do matter in the 21st century. That's why, for example, President Hollande bestowed the Legion of Honor, France's highest award and one of the most coveted in the world, upon six American veterans of World War II. That's why the two presidents, President Hollande and President Obama, went to Monticello, the home of Thomas Jefferson, again, to show to the world that these values are truly our common DNA and matter in the 21st century. And on a more personal note, let me tell you how moving it was for me to be part of these celebrations in Normandy and how moving it is every time I bestow the Legion of Honor upon American veterans of World War II. I must tell you that a few months ago, I went to the Military Academy of West Point to bestow the Legion of Honor upon 45 veterans. This was one of the most moving experiences in my entire life. And as ambassador, I deeply consider that honoring these veterans to whom we owe everything is the most sacred duties of my position.
Well, thank you very much for that, Ambassador Delattre. It's also very personal for me because my father served in World War II. He also served in France and England. So this indeed is a very important occasion to reaffirm those values.
Sure.
But some might say some of these values that we share are under threat. Let's look at some of those threats. Of course, President Obama was in Europe on a so-called reassurance tour to reassure particularly allies in Eastern Europe and the Baltic states as a result of Russia's increasingly aggressive moves after annexation of Crimea and its increasingly aggressive moves in Eastern Ukraine, despite the fact that some troops have been moved back from the border. President Obama has pledged stepped-up military maneuvers to reassure NATO allies, has pledged $1 billion. Do you think he's succeeding from the French point of view? From your point of view, is President Obama doing enough?
We are working very well and very closely together, the French, the Americans, and our other friends and allies. You know, vis-a-vis Russia, I think from day one, we together promoted an approach based on two pillars. The first pillar is firmness. We support and will continue to support Ukraine's territorial integrity and sovereignty. That's why we refused the Russian fait accompli there. You know, we cannot accept to open the Pandora's box of violating borders in Europe and around the world. It would mean the demise of any international order. That's number one. And number two, firmness, but also dialogue. From the very beginning, we've also fought together with our American friends to keep open the channels of communication with Russia in order to initiate de-escalation, in order to make the elections possible, and in order to have Russia and Ukraine around a table discussing together not only gas and oil, but also the political future of Ukraine. And today, I would say that we Europeans have taken the lead in terms of supporting Ukraine. For example, we put on the table a $15 billion financial package to support the sovereignty, the economic recovery of Ukraine.
On the other hand, one could say there is a little bit of daylight between Europe and the United States on Ukraine. I think the United States would like to see greater cooperation. Of course, France in particular went ahead with a sale of a couple of warships to Russia worth $1.6 billion. This caused some friction between the United States and France. What are your thoughts with regard to the sale of these warships, and do you think that is counterproductive?
You know, this is a contract or an order dating back 2011. As you know, in our system, when there is a contract, it has to be implemented. But the thing is that in any case, the question will not arise until October of this year, which is the anticipated date of delivery of these ships. So it's not an urgent question for tomorrow morning. The urgent question for us, and again, where we are working very closely together, is to at the same time address a firm message to Russia and at the same time to support Ukraine and to engage into a political dialogue between Russia and Ukraine. This is the emergency of the day. And that's why after the election, the recent elections in Ukraine, we are working hard with the president of this country, but also with President Putin and Russia, you know, to renew a dialogue leading to a stronger Ukraine preserved in its sovereignty. That's the number one priority that we have. And again, on this, we're completely, very closely together.
Ambassador Delattre, what if Russia continues to destabilize Eastern Ukraine? At what point do you think more sanctions might be warranted?
If indeed Russia continues trying to destabilize the eastern part of, southern part of Ukraine too, then we'll have to consider another step in terms of sanctions. But then we'll have to be fair and to look at military sanctions, financial sanctions, sanctions in the field of energy, so that we are all on the same boat, united, and so that we increase the cost vis-a-vis Russia and not vis-a-vis Europe or vis-a-vis the United States.
Of course, it's very notable that the new president of Ukraine was invited to the commemoration in Normandy. He's very pro-European, Petro Poroshenko. He would like to sign an association agreement, the one that previous President Yanukovych turned down. Do you foresee a day when such an agreement could be signed between Ukraine and...
The short answer is yes. We hope the conditions will be met for him, for the new president of Ukraine, to sign this agreement in the foreseeable future.
Ambassador de Lattre, let's turn now to Syria. President Assad is running for again having what most people call sham elections in the middle of a devastating civil war. And of course, one has to salute France for its very courageous positions, both in the United Nations Security Council, your ambassador to the UN has condemned Assad's use of chlorine gas on innocent civilians. He spearheaded a UN resolution asking for the International Criminal Court to investigate war crimes in Syria. Of course, this did not pass because of Russia. Russia vetoed that. And we all recall back in August of 2013 when the U.S. backed down on a missile strike, France was ready with the jets on the tarmac. So we see some differences on Syria between the United States and France. To what extent does Paris feel somewhat hamstrung by Washington vis-a-vis Syria? Would Paris like a more supportive stance vis-a-vis the moderate opposition, or have things gone too far? Is it too late, despite the fact that we know that President Obama talks about perhaps bolstering the moderate opposition to fight both the Al-Qaeda elements and, of course, Assad? But it just seems like things have gone so far by now.
You know, Carol, confronted with what is probably the worst human tragedy in the 21st century, it's never too late. And we, the democracies, have to stand up if we believe in the values I was referring to and try to put this tragedy to an end. In the example you were referring to, the truth, though, is that it is based on the Franco-American threat of the use of force against Bashar that he decided to engage into the chemical disarmament. So that's a result that is not enough, of course, but still we have, based on the threat of the use of force again, Franco-American threat, gotten some results that are not unimportant, as you know. But I think it's fair that, and it's the French position, that we have to do collectively more in terms of, number one, promoting the moderate part of the opposition, in terms of, number two, sticking to our strategic goal, which is a political transition in Syria. And we all know that presidential election there was a mockery. And number three, we have to foster our humanitarian commitment to Syria. Let's keep in mind that we've had there 150,000 people killed, literally millions of displaced persons and refugees. This is something that we cannot accept. So if we can do better collectively, yes, of course. If it's too late, no. It's never too late. Again, if we believe in the values that we stand for, then we have together the US, France, our other friends and allies in the region and in Europe, be even more committed to solving this tragedy in Syria.
I'll come back to that in just a minute, but first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is His Excellency François de Lattre, the Ambassador of France to the United States, and I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that Press Conference USA is also available online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. And as always, we love to hear from you. Please send your feedback to PCUSA@voanews.com. And here's a shout out and thank you to a loyal listener from Cambodia, Kut Savi Okun Shran. If you want to hear your name on the show and a thank you in your native language, please send me an email to PCUSA@voanews.com. Well, Mr. Ambassador, back to Syria briefly, because what we're seeing is blowback actually in Europe. We note that many of these jihadis who have gone to Syria came from Europe and now are returning and posing a very dire threat to the continent, to France in particular. How is Paris dealing with this threat?
This is for us, for France, and I believe also for the United States and for other European countries, one of the key priorities here. How to better fight against these jihadist groups in Syria, where more and more dual nationals from our countries go in order to fight with jihad and then come back to France, to the United States, to Britain, to Germany, to engage in terrorist actions. And that's one of the fields in which there is a growing partnership between the US and Europe. On this, let me tell you, Carol, that, and you know the long tradition of French humility here, but I think France and the United States today are each other's closest allies in the fight against terrorism. It's true in Syria, to come back to your question, but it's also true in Africa, as illustrated by France's military operation in Mali, with much appreciated American support to fight against Al-Qaeda in Africa. And this fight is from time to time underestimated in America and in other countries. What is important to consider is that we had to fight in Mali, and not only in Mali, but in neighboring countries, against one of the best trained, best equipped, best funded branches, I mean Al-Qaeda branches in the world, based on years, if not decades, of drug trafficking, human trafficking, weapons and cigarette smuggling. So the fight against Al-Qaeda is really happening worldwide. And again, in this fight, France and the United States are, in my views, each other's closest allies. And it's also true in Syria, to come back to your question, where it's, again, one of the top priorities that we together have.
Isn't it ironic, though, that a lot of these jihadis, some of whom, as you say, have dual passports, they're leaving from Europe to go to Syria to fight Assad. Assad is really the root of the problem.
Oh, completely.
But some say, well, maybe just deal with Assad, he's the lesser of two evils. But as long as he's there, we know that Sunni radicals, extremists, Al-Qaeda-linked extremists, will continue to fight against his presence. So would you agree that it's still important to work toward a transition?
Oh, I completely agree. That's why I mentioned in my priority that the political transition is the priority that we should promote and constantly have in mind. I think your point is very good. I completely share it. I would add something. I would add the fact that our views is that there is an objective alliance and tactical alliance that we see on the ground between Assad and some of these jihadist groups that you were referring to. Tactical alliance against whom? Against the moderate part of the opposition that we precisely, we, the democracies and others, have to better support.
A very good point. Before we turn to Africa, let's just talk briefly about Iran. That's another topic on which France, the United States, and other European countries obviously are working toward a deal coming up in July. Are you optimistic that a deal can be reached with Iran to limit its nuclear program? We know that France played a very important role in towing a harder line early on in these negotiations.
I would say that negotiations are serious, but difficult by definition. It could not be otherwise, quite frankly. Here, you know, our views is that a nuclear-armed Iran is simply unacceptable for at least three reasons. Number one, because it would mean threat and potentially an existential threat for the security of Israel. Number two, because a nuclear-armed Iran would trigger an arms race and potentially a nuclear arms race in the Middle East and beyond. Is it what we need in the most volatile region of the world? And number three, if you think about it, a nuclear-armed Iran would mean the demise of the non-proliferation international regime that we together patiently built over the last decades. So it's not an option. So if, again, if we believe in our core values, if we, the US, France, a couple of others, P5 plus one, are really committed to world security, we have to have a deal, but not at any cost. A deal that is in line with our key requirements, which is not to make possible for Iran to acquire nuclear weapons, period. And so we have to remain tough. If we can have an agreement, of course, that would be the best option. Otherwise, we'll have to continue to negotiate together with our P5 plus one partners on the basis of a strong position.
Very good. Well, moving on to Africa, you mentioned earlier the French cooperation in Mali, of course, the CAR, Central African Republic, and now Nigeria with Boko Haram on the rise. It's very disconcerting. And of course, President Obama and the United States are very grateful to France for sending in troops, particularly in Mali, taking the lead in counterterrorism efforts. But we're seeing setbacks now in Mali. I know the French would like to have started to pull out, you know, train the troops in Mali. Where do things stand right now?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the situation in Mali is much, much better compared to what it was a few months ago. Let's remember that 15 months ago, Mali was under immediate threat of becoming not only a failed state, but going to the hands of Al-Qaeda there. Al-Qaeda in Islamic Maghreb, Hakim, as we say in English. And based on the French intervention, we have liberated Mali from Al-Qaeda, and we have paved the way for the reconstruction and stabilization of the country. That is underway, and that is going all in all well. I think that's the reality here. Of course, we have to pay attention to the political dialogue and to encourage, that's what we do, especially in the north, in Kidal, vis-à-vis the Tuareg populations there. Yes. Of course, it's not easy. And now the requirement for success, for complete success, is again, number one, to promote the political dialogue within the country, and number two, to make sure with our allies and friends that we, the international community, stay committed to the economic development of Mali and of the whole region. That's why, for example, we France, we went to the IMF and the European Union to make sure that there is a strong financial package in support of Mali and the region, number one. And number two, that's why we made sure that our, you know, military posture in the region is deployed almost from coast to coast to make sure that Al-Qaeda in Africa has no chance to get stronger in the coming years. So our commitment is complete, and I must say that the partnership between the US and France on that is very, very good, and we much appreciate American support, not only in Mali, but in Central African Republic that you mentioned, and in other parts of Africa. We are completely on the same boat, on the same line, on all this, and working very closely together.
So France is pleased with the kind of cooperation they're getting from the United States, even though France is really taking the lead physically on the ground.
Sure.
Well, Mr. Ambassador, in the few minutes we have left, let's turn back to Europe and the values of which you spoke. We note that there were parliamentary elections for the European Union, and we watched how mainstream parties across Europe, and particularly in France, suffered a major drubbing, as we say, in the EU Parliament. We saw in France where the Le Front National from sure. Le Pen took at least 25% of seats in the Parliament. How concerned are you about this trend that comes with the xenophobia, racism, and this anti-EU stance?
I think you have, to oversimplify, of course, you have three things in these results, not only in France, by the way, but in several countries in Europe. The number one is about domestic politics, so I cannot comment on this. That's one thing. The second thing is about the European integration process. I think beyond the populist movements, I think there is a concern, widely shared in Europe, to bring more democracy, more political control in a positive way behind the European integration process. People, you know, public opinions, tend to perceive these European integration process as being on autopilot, to oversimplify. And they don't like that, so they want to be sure that we, the government, the public opinions, regain control of this European boat, so to speak. That's another thing. And the third thing is about these xenophobic or from time to time also anti-Semitic wind that you can feel here and there, and that they're the only answer is zero tolerance. That's clearly the French view, the determination of the French authorities in the fight against xenophobic, racist, anti-Semitic, you know, winds is absolute, and will continue to fight against this scourge with any conceivable means. There is no doubt about it. And in cooperation again with the United States, with the Jewish American organizations, and with our friends around the world. This is a global threat. I think that anti-Semitism is an existential threat to each and every one of us.
Well, certainly we'll be following the trends in Europe to see to what extent these elections are a wake-up call to Europe. But I'd like to conclude, Mr. Ambassador, on another note, hopefully a positive one, the state of the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, the so-called TTIP,
yes.
The European-United sure. States partnership, which is being negotiated at this time. The negotiations are aimed at removing trade barriers in a wide range of economic sectors so as to make it easier to import and export between the United States and Europe. How optimistic are you that this will actually take off, and what are the sticking points for France at this point?
You are absolutely right. I think if we put things into perspective, it's fair to say that French-American relations have rarely been stronger than they are today, as illustrated by President Hollande's recent state visit to the United States, as illustrated also by French Foreign Minister Fabius' visit to this country a few weeks ago. At the same time, I think it's fair to say that the more Asia and the emerging world are rising, which is great, by the way, the more the transatlantic partnership is critical and vital as one of the backbones of today's and tomorrow's multipolar world. On the economic front, TTIP, as we name it, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, is one of the pillars of this transatlantic partnership. Let's never forget that we together, Europe and the United States, remain the anchor of the world economy, accounting together for nearly half the global GDP, two-thirds of the global innovation process. So what is at stake here is promoting jobs and promoting trade and cross-investment between Europe and the United States. But it's also about making sure that our norms and standards and IPs and social and environmental beliefs are well taken into account worldwide vis-à-vis our other partners. So a lot is at stake here, and we, France, are very much in favor, of course, of a success in these negotiations.
Ambassador François Delattre is the French ambassador to the United States. Ambassador Delattre, I can't thank you enough for coming in and sharing your thoughts on this historic occasion.
Thank you very much.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. From Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, the Voice of America has brought you Press Conference USA. You can email your questions or comments about this edition of Press Conference USA to pcusa@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune to the Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us again next week when another newsmaker speaks with journalists about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. We'll see you next week for another edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.